Hi everyone, welcome to episode 002 of Osmosis with him.
That's me, Jamie McMillan.
And me, Callum Murray.
Oh yeah.
How are you doing today, guys? Sweet. I hope that everyone is doing well and is healthy and is happy.
Are you good, Callum?
I am exhausted, mate. we had Ofsted at school this week, which is always terrifying. But it was actually, I think it went okay. We're not a special measures school. We're a good school. And it was just basically to check in and make sure that we are still good, which hopefully we are. We'll know when we see the report, but it seems that the initial feedback was positive.
Good job. My week. Nothing exciting this week.
Nothing at all exciting? Right, we don't mind a quiet week.
No. Quiet week's good.
And you're in your office right now as opposed to your bedroom, so you could be louder.
It's a professional environment. I don't have small children woes. Yep. This is ideal.
I've locked the doggy away. She's with Josie doing some food, so yeah, I will not be disturbed either, so hopefully it will be jolly good fun.
Ideal.
Yeah.
Nice.
So
what are we talking about today?
Illumination for computer generated pictures. 1975, this paper.
Ancient.
Right? 1975. Oh, yeah. So it's a real old one.
This is by Fong from the University of Utah. Yeah. So history of this paper. So for me, this was, just foundational in my thesis. So I was looking at how shiny things are in different directions with a specific temperature focus. But an aspect I was really interested in was like computer graphics visualization. So everything that we see today in like modern animated films. So I'm thinking, like, Moana is a phenomenal example of, like, a beautifully ray-traced, like, island, all the textures, the lighting. Mm-hmm. It's just, oh, wonderful. Yep. Let's go back a couple of years, this is the state of the art. So this is the Fong shading model, or Fong reflection model. So if anyone's familiar with, I don't know, any shaders or, like, computer graphics-y things, then this will be up there in iconic names. But yeah. Illumination for computer-generated pictures.
So for me, who is not accustomed to those things, just a bloke talking about CRT monitors.
He is just a bloke talking about CRT monitors. Yeah. 5.5 inch. Tiny.
To be honest, I found this really interesting. And when I was reading through, I love Fig 3, I think, is really pretty just on its own, like as a
oh yeah,
you know, with the polygons on the surface, and each polygon is shaded based on like the overall value of it. I thought that was really cool, I got completely lost sort of from page is that, page 4 onwards, when he starts
talking Mach
band effect and.
Oh, I tuned out for that bit too.
Yeah, to be fair, it confused me a little bit. yeah, and I did very much skim over a lot of the maths at the end. When there's a lot of letters, my brain just doesn't register. I guess this is why I didn't do very well in my final year of university, because I was not very good at reading and accessing scientific papers, either through laziness or maybe, I was going to say, a little bit of ADHD. I'm not diagnosed. It exists when I was a kid, so yeah, but I really enjoyed it, to be honest, and it was a really interesting sort of step into the past. And I know this is like unrelated, but I remember watching like a video online about the video game Horizon. Do you play Horizon?
Ooh.
On PlayStation 4?
The driving one or the one with the arrows?
The arrows. Zero Dawn, is it Zero Dawn?
Yes.
Yeah. So yep. I remember watching an interview or something with the creators of the game, and they were talking about how it would only render the things that the player could see, and there was like a zoomed out of the game. Wherever the character was looking, the sprites would just pop up. And I thought that that kind of, it was weird, because when you're playing a game like that, it's so immersive. The world feels so real, but you take a step back and it's not real. Or when you play like, I don't know, Dark Souls or something, and you see Midir in the Ring City DLC, you see Midir sitting on the big pillar when you enter the Ring City, and you're like, but you could never get to the Ring City. It's probably only this big. It's just in the background image, and it's weird looking at a paper like this, because it's like the genesis almost of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That,
so
that idea.
Every time I think about that whole that you just see that your field of view, like that just blows my mind. Like, I'm just trying to think of the. To me, it seems just impractical to do all of that computation as I turn.
But I suppose it's easier than doing 360 degrees of everything. It must be.
Yeah, it is logical. Like, I take, what are we, 2 pi, 4 pi, many pi's, like some subsection of pi compared to my 4 pi of my entire sphere.
It's crazy. Yeah, it makes sense. It is crazy.
But it still blows my mind every time.
It does. And it does really blow my mind.
So, what, a bit of perspective here. So, this is 1975. Let me take you back to the Altair 8800. So this was the type of computer that you and I could afford. It was delivered with 1 kilobyte of memory.
1 kilobyte of memory.
Nuts.
That's mad.
If you instead had money, if you had the dollar, then you had the IBM 5100, which was it was about 20K. And had 64 kilobytes of RAM, so state-of-the-art was still in the order of kilobytes.
Imagine how fuming you'd be if you'd spent, like, if you'd, like, saved up back then, and now you can get, like, a million terabyte USB stick for, like, a tenner or whatever. It's crazy. That's even, I said USB stick there. When was the last time people used USB sticks? I don't think I've used one in years. I literally haven't used one in years.
Storage media, what's that? Yeah, so this is a time when, like, a kilobyte of memory is, that's what you got to play with. Yeah. So trying to do all of your shading, hold all that stuff in memory, you're asking a lot from your 1,000 bytes, but still.
Yes, it is mad. So, it is mad. It always makes me think of, impressive. Like, the original Pokemon games on the Game Boy Color. And how,
what about them?
How they're obviously built on a really small amount of memory, probably considerably more than 1K, I would imagine, because that was like 20 years after these computers. Google it. Good idea. Google it. But like those games that are held together with like bits of sellotape, basically, they're so easy to break, like the code to break.
What? Are they easy to break? Maybe they are.
I think they are.
Memory? Kilobytes.
Me, you never accidentally went to Glitch City on Pokemon Red. You definitely did.
Okay. Yeah, no, I did do that.
Yeah.
According to unknown source, 56 kilobytes 56. To 2 megabytes. Tiny still.
Considerably larger, though, than the computers we're
It is considerably
about
larger. What shading was in Pokemon? Let me just think back to a Squirtle. You probably had some decent shading on a
but they weren't
black and white Squirtle.
They were just black or... They were just... The pixels were just on or off. On the original.
But that's the same as what we see here, I think.
Yeah,
tell me if I'm wrong.
I guess
so. Yeah, there's still black and white representations.
I suppose the biggest difference is this is a three-dimensional shape, so there's an extra dimension to it, whereas OG Pokemon was in two dimensions.
Yeah. Yeah, and they probably didn't need to do the computation real-time. Fixed assets for that. Yeah, all right, we digress. Pokemon, man.
Right, so let's talk about... Talk about the paper. Teach me some things.
All right. So I picked up the key themes for this paper. So if you're trying to do this computer graphics within this this time, there were three primary challenges that were like fields of research. So you had object modeling. How do I draw a shape or a sphere? Sorry. Or how do I draw a cube? That's nice and easy. But what if I want to draw, I don't know, this square with lots of like curvy edges and things like that? Then it starts to get really complicated. So modeling of your objects, hidden surface removal. So if I want to visualize this surface, then I don't need to render everything back here because it's not in view. So similar to the horizon thing.
Yeah.
give me what I need. Let's be efficient with memory here. And then the third aspect was shading. How do I make it look realistic? And the language is...
The language in this paper is beautiful.
It's
kind of like it needs to be realistic enough. I think I can find it here.
It's so pragmatic.
Where is... there's a quote. I haven't highlighted it because I read this on my phone. Normally I would highlight it. I'm sure it'll find it later.
I've got the quote.
Go on.
Here, we hope only to display an image that approximates the real object closely enough to provide a certain degree of realism.
Yeah. And isn't that Pixar? Like, Pixar isn't photorealism. Yeah. But
no, they just make it look just right.
It's realistic enough. It's stylized enough. Although I suppose back then in 1975, it wasn't even about art and stylizing, which it very much is these days. It's just about getting it out there. Like if you look at some of the really old like space games and stuff that are just built with polygons made out of lines whizzing into the camera as you go through space... Obviously, it's, again, not three-dimensional, but it's like on a 2D plane and where the shapes are is made to look 3D. It's so cool. It's so cool.
It's really good. It's really good. So just real pragmatic, modelling, which is awesome. Yeah. Focus of the paper is how do I shade things?
Yes.
They touch on, like, the coupled nature of my hidden surface algorithms and modelling curved surfaces and how you might derive a slightly different shading model based on that, but shading's the focus.
Yes. So my understanding was that the first way they talk about it is this, I think it's called a planar approximation, which is basically taking your three-dimensional shape and overlaying flat plane shapes to approximate the curve. But
this is definitely going to be a video game episode because now I'm thinking of Star Fox 64.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can recall, like, Andross's face. Like, you could see the polygons.
So true story. Whenever I talk about... So in science at GCC, we have to talk about resolution as being sort of... So resolution is the smallest possible quantity that an instrument can detect, right? And what I use as a visual for that is I look at like Doom from the 80s or the 90s or whatever it was,
and Doom from the old
and Doom 2016, and then I put the original like photographs taken of Pluto versus the Pluto photographs that were taken as when we flew past it back in whenever that was. Those are still my favorite space pictures, the Pluto pictures, where you can see the sort of different colors and it's super high res and it's just gorgeous. I'm digressing myself, but I was going to say that the Doom guy, probably the biggest polygon, the most famous polygons is actually a pair of polygons. Which polygons am I thinking of?
A pair of polygons.
A very, very big, famous pair of polygons. Write it in the comments if you think... Lara Croft.
Those two
Leo
polygons.
G polygons. But I actually Those have a feeling polygons. That it was just one polygon back in the day. I think it was just one big novel. Triangle across her chest. One big
well, that's
prism.
Not a polygon, then. That's a polyhedron. It's got to be polygons. Polygons 2D. Polyhedron 3D?
Potato. I don't know. Shall I Google it?
I think it was multiple triangles. Multiple triangles. All right.
Polyhedron is a three-dimensional object with flat polygonal faces. There you go. So you're
there
right.
There you go.
Hedron. Either way. Well, in that case, there's what? At Good least hedron. Two, three, four polygons that are very well known.
What did you pick up on the how they went about it? So you said you lost the track after the Max Ender effect. What did you follow?
I really liked looking at the pictures. So
the pictures are really good for this paper.
So to be honest, not much. But I understand. I'm going to bring you back to figure two again, which is that picture of the vase that is used Nuo Sancha shading technique. So I really liked that one because they literally take the individual polygons after they've polygoned it, and then they just paint the whole thing in the color that is, I suppose, the average of that particular polygon. And I really liked this, and it made me think, could I do a Warhammer model painted like that? I think it would be quite a challenge, but I might give it a go someday.
That would certainly be pragmatic for Warhammer modeling. Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah.
You can get your highlights. It's nice.
The highlights are quite a challenging thing. I hadn't realised how challenging highlights were to make until I...
Hang on, are we talking about computer-generated highlights or your painted highlights?
Computer-generated highlights.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It sounds like they're quite challenging to do.
Well, what do you know what causes the highlights?
Reflection.
Yes, but what type of reflection?
Specular reflection.
Yeah. And
again, this, I was hoping you could give any potential students listening a lovely definition of what we mean by a specular reflection. We do specular and we do planar reflection at GCSE, along with refraction as well.
What's planar?
Like on a surface, like off a mirror, like a plane mirror. Is it called planar reflection, or am I going crazy?
Yeah, no, you're probably right there. Well, in that case, I think planar reflection would be specular reflection, right?
My understanding of specular reflection is that the light comes off at many different angles because the surface isn't perfectly smooth. Whereas, I don't think it's called planar reflection because
that would be diffuse.
Where did I get planar reflection from?
Well, it's off a plane.
Yeah, I know, but... Oh, my God. Am I that tired?
So, reflection, or... If we think about the types of ways that light interacts with surfaces, so I try to think of diffuse reflection as really cloudy day, sun's coming through the cloud, and the cloud adds, like, a diffusivity to that light. And so then when I look out the world outside on a cloudy day, everything looks bright. It's all just really, really bright, but it's all about the same brightness.
Yeah.
So that's diffuse. It's all like scattered in a way that it's evenly distributed. And then there's specular reflection, which will be when that light is reflected. I'm trying to think, is it a collimated? It's not a collimated. It's just really tightly focused. So an easy way to think about this is, it's a mirror.
Yeah.
So if I hold a piece of metal up outside and it's a sunny day and the sun's, if I angle it just right, I get the really shiny bit of my eye. So when you're trying to like use your watch or phone and blind someone in the in the classroom, that's specular reflection. And so you think about those two together. Specular and diffuse. And you could have it gets all wacky when you start thinking like spectrally about different wavelengths.
Wacky is my favourite.
Because some materials, they might be very diffuse at most wavelengths, and then at one particular wavelength, they're really specular.
Really?
That's and that means they look like you might... So you could think of aluminium in this instance. So it mostly looks quite grey. That's its diffuse component. But it also has a specular component. And at one particular... Well, actually, I think it's at an angle. What has the... Maybe I'm thinking of silica dioxide. Yeah, maybe there's something else. Some things are weird spectrally. Some things are weird directionally. I think aluminium's a directional thing. Like glancing angles, it's really specular. But
right.
Weird things spectrally as well.
Spectrum That's very diffuse. Interesting. I didn't know that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, so this the model that Fong's working on here is, if we shortcut a little bit to the end, then it builds a model that is, it comprises three elements. So it's got your diffuse and your specular components, but it also has an ambient, like, make it a little bit brighter factor. So, yeah, those are the three, like, key components for a reflection model.
Okay.
But yeah, highlights are difficult. But so, they're mostly just specular components, if you can describe those well.
So Is that, because later on in the paper they have another picture of my favourite little vase, but then it's has the
good
improved
vase.
shading.
Look at figure 9. It's just,
it's gorgeous,
figure 8 and 9.
It? They're my
Work of
favourites,
art.
for sure.
I really like these.
I kind of prefer the first one. I do. I do. Like, he's put all this work in. I think the first one's more stylized.
It is more stylized.
It's got a nicer look to it, you know? If I was making a video game, the first one would be my art style.
Yep.
But yeah, so you can see on this one, there's obviously a lot more detailed shading. And so is that because there's just a much, 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 much higher polygon count as well?
So he kind of goes into this. So there's a tangent that he runs, which is, well, let's just reduce the... So I can take my vectors, or my polygons, sorry, and I can make them look like they do on figure 2. Or I can make those polygons really small, make lots of them, and then it should look better.
Yeah.
So yes, you can do that. He argues kind of against it.
Yes.
But then it kind of feels like his proposed method uses that.
Doesn't he talk about getting the size of the polygon down to like the size of the resolution, effectively? I'm sure I read that in the paper.
That's the
smallest possible limit. And at that point, there's just thousands of polygons. You might as well try something else.
I'm assuming there's some subtlety here that I'm overlooking.
There's definitely a lot of subtlety that I'm overlooking.
But there's so one aspect of the Phong shading model is you have the shading part, which is, equation 3. So that's the Phong shading model. But there's the other aspect is equation 2, which is
equation 3.
Page 315 or page 5. It's near figure 7.
Oh, is it the one with the little three next to it?
Yeah, that's equation 3.
Sorry, I thought it would have
So that's your shading model.
Talk me through it.
No, I'm going to go back to equation 2 for now. So, an important aspect of the Phong shading model is the linear approximation of points along a line. So if we have a curved surface, see, what's the easiest way to describe this? If we have a curved surface, we can take two points on that and we can draw a line between those two points.
Right.
And now I want to work out the normal to
define
each point along that line.
Normal, because normal is...
Well, normal is the not weird part.
No, but normal is... we talk about the normal line at school. So what do you mean by that?
If I take a plane... This phone's been overused today.
Plane being a flat surface.
If I take a plane, which is a two-dimensional flat surface.
That's not 2D though, phone. Jamie. That's a phone.
Approximation. Approximation. Let's imagine this is at an infinite distance and it's it becomes infinitely thin. Two-dimensional approximation here. So the surface normal is the vector or the arrow pointing perpendicularly away from that surface. So if I had... this is going to be awful for audio-only users. If I was pointing out the back of my phone, then it's going to be pointing out that way. And if I was to move my phone, then the normal vector moves with it. So it just always, moves
perpendicularly.
Perpendicular
to the surface. So if you're, if I'm understanding you correctly, we're thinking about a curved surface. We're picking two points on that curve, drawing a straight line between them, and then looking at the normal off of that. And I suppose... But I suppose the closer the points are together, the better approximation you're going to get.
Yep, that's right.
Right. So we're on the same page. Continue.
Yep. So there's equation 2 has some sort of like weighting between your two points. So if you're a little bit, if you're one end or the other, then your normal is exactly at those two normals from my curve. And if you're somewhere in between, then it just does a linear approximation of where the vector, where the arrow points to between those two either end normals.
Yeah.
So rather than defining your line as a curved surface, so like a multi-order polynomial, so thinking like x squared or higher order function that is just more computational time to compute. You can treat it as a linear approximation, and then it just becomes really quick to calculate. So it just all moves linearly along that. So the linear approximation aspect of the surface normals was, it's a pretty natty, like, just shortcut, basically.
Yeah.
Computational shortcut.
Smart shortcut as well.
It's efficient. Yep. There's a nice, there's a nice touch at the end in the conclusion where they discussed, okay, well, let's just, for sake of argument, replace that linear approximation with like a cubic approximation. So rather than thinking about a straight line between them, I'm not even thinking about a curvy line between them. I'm thinking about a line that could be even slightly more curvier with an additional point of inflection along that line. So a really accurate line to represent that surface, even when I do this really computationally intensive line or normal estimation, they said that the like visual appearance between them wasn't much at all. So at least in this context, linear approximation, good enough.
That's the job. And the thing is, as technology has got better and better and better, and you know, people are leaning more into being more stylized when they're making three-dimensional assets for video games or movies or whatever, it kind of doesn't matter how good it looks sometimes, because the style is more important and what people's tastes are is more important.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yep.
Where is that, what you were just saying? I can't find...
Oh, about the higher order thing. Mm. Somewhere in the conclusion. So final page. Oh... Cubic. If you search cubic car, here we go. So if we're like the second to last paragraph.
Yeah, I can see it. For the shading. Furthermore, little difference existed between pictures generated with the new shading and the ones created with cubic interpolant curve for the shading computation. Furthermore, as time is critical in real-time dynamic picture display, which it is, you don't want to turn around in Horizon Zero Dawn and see everything pop in. That would ruin your immersion in the beautiful world that people have made, right? So time is a critical factor in the real-time dynamic picture display system. The use of a high-degree interpolation curve does not seem to be possible at the moment with the current techniques to compute the coefficients of such a function. It mentions it's not possible at the moment. I imagine it's very possible now, because computers are a heck of a lot stronger.
I've got more than 1 kilobyte in my computer.
Yeah, definitely. Quite a bit more than 1K in my... This call, this... The file for this video is many, many times 1K. The file for the audio is many, many times 1K.
Yeah, we have that now. I'm assuming that just must be a comment on the
context of the time. I find it amazing how it's come forward like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah,
pretty impressive.
Where are we going next in the paper, Dr. McMillan? Point me to something else that's interesting and teachable.
Interested. So we talked about equation 2. I don't think I'm going to go on many more equations than equation 3. Everything beyond that was just lots we're doing some approximation. Well, it looks
so
crazy, but it's mostly just like Cartesian geometry stuff, which is boring and fine and reasonable. But equation 3, that's where the meat and potatoes of the model is. So maybe have a look there.
The shading function model, yes?
Yeah. So this will be... Here is an equation that describes...
So before you describe the equation, I will just read the definition of what a shading function is. Okay, I'll read it out. I'll read it out for the people. In computer graphics, a shading function is defined as a function which yields the intensity value of each point on the body of an object from the characteristics of the light source, the object, and the position of the observer. So we're talking here about, if I'm looking at a thing, where is the light more intense? Where is the light less intense in relation to me and what the object is and what the light source is?
Yep.
Okay, so I understand the definition. Talk me through.
That makes sense. All right, so it's just how light is a thing.
Mm.
And you can think about how light it is in different wavelengths to give you a colour and whatnot. But in this instance, we're just looking at black and white. So what do we have here? So we have, we've got CP, which is reflection coefficient, so it's how reflective a surface or a material might be, plus some things, and then plus another thing. But if we have a look at this equation, there are three chunks. So what I described earlier, where you have the we have the diffuse component, we have the ambient component, and we have the specular component. So the first aspect is this diffuse component. So this is your, like, everything before the plus D, if you're looking at it.
Yeah.
So here we can see that there, this diffuse component, it's a function of where the observer is. So that cos I describes where the observer is looking in terms of angle with respect to your object. You have 1 minus D, which is just a description about the how transmissive the... or how diffuse the environment
environmental
is.
Diffuse coefficient. So is that just a number that is...
I guess so.
How cloudy is it number, basically?
I guess so, yeah. It doesn't give a range for this number, so I'm not quite sure. I'm assuming it's a between 0 and 1 sort of thing.
0 to a million.
I hope it's 0 to 1, given the 1 minus component. That would make sense. But yeah, so we have this diffuse component that just says, when I'm looking directly at my surface, it's bright. And if I'm looking at an angle, it's less bright.
Right.
And then we got another component, which is the, if we expand our brackets, then it's the reflectivity component multiplied by the diffusivity. So that's just your ambient light. So give me a little bit brighter if it's a shiny object and it's not, and we're not in the middle of a cloud.
Right.
So that's your ambient component. And then you got the final potatoes of the meat and potatoes, which is your specular component, which describes fudge factors.
How reflective is I guess
it's how specular the reflectiveness of the surface is, the CP, the reflection component.
Okay.
But that final component there, the W and the N, they're just what makes it look right. Tweak the numbers, oh, that looks about shiny enough. Yeah, so I going into this research, at the time of my thesis, I was interested in how can I make things look as real as possible from, like, a physical model perspective. So naturally, given the context of the time, this was reaching physical-based models. Not easy and computationally expensive, and why would you do that when you can approximate it and it looks good enough? But yeah, these two would be... in heavy contrast to any physical-based model for shading that one might try to model.
Future episode? Yeah,
fudge factors. Mm-hmm. Could do.
Maybe we should do ray tracing, segment called Fudge Factors. That sounds like fun. I just want
I'd rather the feature on ray tracing. That's a cool topic, man.
To be honest, all I know about ray tracing is my computer doesn't do it very well. So ray tracing is the idea of light source, and it, like, individually traces each individual light ray, is my assumption, which is why my computer doesn't do it very well. I mean, my new computer actually doesn't do it too bad, but my old computer would have a breakdown if I tried to turn ray tracing on.
Yeah, I don't quite get the whole marketing thing on this computer's good, this computer's not good, or, like, this graphics card is good or not good for ray tracing. Because from my perspective, it's just a computational thing.
Yeah, so it's... I mean, I got a much bigger graphics card and like, a newer one. My graphics card was, like, I don't know. When did I get it? 2017, my last graphics card, which is, you know, that's 7 years ago. And it wasn't new when I bought it. It was, like, I can't afford, you know, $3,000-$4,000 for a graphics card. So it's, you know, £500-£300 range.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Ray tracing is nuts. It's awesome. And if we kind of put them on a scale between ray tracing and this Phong shading model, they are opposite ends of the
scale.
Really?
We must do a ray tracing episode then.
Don't be keen on that one.
Don't tell me everything about ray tracing now, because...
I'm not gonna.
Okay, that's all right. Give me my whistle a little bit for next time.
All right. So, empirical model is something that makes something look about right. Mm-hmm. In this context, so here we have the Phong model, which makes things look just about right. It's empirical, which
means enough.
it's good enough. The like the variables in there aren't measured properties per se. They're just numbers that make an equation behave the way I need it to.
Yeah.
So that those W and the N, they're empirical factors in this physical based model, which right. is what Fong was working to. And then the other end of that is ray tracing, which is saying I'm gonna do the physics on this.
So is thing. Ray tracing just essentially a physics engine?
Basically, yeah.
That's cool.
I like ray tracing.
That sounds really cool. That's definitely gonna have to be a future topic. Because that sounds interesting to me, and it will, because you're right. There are a lot of graphics cards that sort of say we do ray tracing well. Lots of brands and lots of makes, but like, why? What makes you special?
Yep. Yeah. So that's the meat and potatoes of Fong.
Nice. It's a good model. Meat and potatoes. This was. Do we want to do a little final thoughts bit now? We can sort of talk about takeaways and things like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Did you have any other points that you wanted to educate me on?
I tried to do a little bit of reading on where else Fong has been used, but I couldn't find any comprehensive lists. But what I do anecdotally recall is, what was I using? Blender. So Blender's a tool for like
3D modeling and
shading.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, 3D modeling and shading. And it's like on there, like your drop down of shading model is Fong, Blinfong, Torrent, Sparrow, and all of that. So yeah, just for context, this is up there in terms of shading models that
is it good
in the day and that are still good.
That's crazy. Yeah.
I mean, why not? It's such a computationally efficient thing. When I'm doing my rendering of an object in a CAD, I'm tweaking little like model aspects of it, like how the shape looks. I don't want to like re-ray trace everything each time. So I don't know if you're familiar with those types of software, but just having that quick on the fly, quick render.
Yeah.
This would be part of that like quick render. And then when you want to do your, all right, now make it look pretty, spend 10 minutes to make my model, then you employ some heavy duty stuff.
Sounds brilliant. I love that.
Yeah, so it's used. Still the thing. So yeah, and I noted that Valve had a page on Half-Life 2 Episode 1, which was they were bigging up the highlights. This is a game released in 2006, and you can see they give a nice demonstration of here's just like an ambient flat light, and then here's it with highlights, and it looks mostly the same.
Are you talking about in the game?
Or... In the game.
I've never played Half-Life, which is a big
neither have I.
Attention. Oh really? So we're both losers.
Yeah.
Apparently, Half-Life is like the game to play.
It is a game.
I'm told
it is a game.
By many, many people.
Yeah, I haven't played it, but I saw the picture, and then I saw the highlights on the, like the nose, and nice. I'm like, oh yeah, there's highlights,
nice,
man.
Nice.
Specular reflection.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I think for me, mine's a little bit more esoteric. It's not so grounded in the science. For me, I don't know if it's necessarily a takeaway or just a point of joy. I just really enjoyed learning about this sort of, because I'm not like you. I haven't read loads of papers. I'm like okay ways smart, but I don't know all of the things. And this, it was just really interesting to understand, not even necessarily understand fully, but just begin to appreciate sort of the depths and the history behind things that I do every single day and that, you know, have impacted my life so, so much. It's a bit more, it's almost profound in a way, you know.
Whoa.
I just love this sort of stuff. I love it so much. And it does. And it just makes me feel really little in this endless universe. It does. It makes me feel really little.
Excuse
but
me.
Like in the best way. Like, yes, I'm little. I'm also here and I get to enjoy the fruits of this work. You know, people alive 50 years ago don't get to enjoy the fruits of this work. You know, I do. And I feel very lucky to have that. And that is actually profound.
That's a profound.
Tell me that's not profound.
Good, sir.
Fong would be very happy knowing that we think that.
I wonder if we could catch Fong.
Special guest?
Yeah. Special guest.
Is he alive? 1975 was a long time ago. Googling it? Are you
I'm not Googling it.
Okay, don't Google it, just in case.
I'm not going to Google it.
If he is alive, you can hit us up. Just send us a DM. If you're not, thank you for the paper and for your contributions to the world.
Thanks a lot, Fong.
Cheers, mate.
Where can people find us, Callum?
They can find us on Spotify at Osmosis Cast and on YouTube at Osmosis Cast. And if you send me a DM, I'll tell you where to find Dr. Jamie directly.
Oh, yeah. That's it. Cracking. Catch
I think
you later.
That's it. Do I need to say anything else? Where else can we find? Or is that it? Just those two?
That's it.
Now?
Perfect. Well, it's more than Spotify. It's more than Spotify.
Is it all...
Wherever you find your good podcast.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
That's the line.
That again. You can
don't worry about it. Don't need
SoundCloud.
To.
Can they find us on SoundCloud? They probably can't find us on SoundCloud, can they? You can definitely find us on Spotify, though, because I...
That's what you can find.
Yeah.
I know that one. I know
and
that one.
YouTube, because I made the YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, thank you so much for listening. This has been episode 002 of Osmosis Cast. With me, Callum, and with
and
you.
Me, Jamie.
Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.